Okay, I see that today's learning is sponsored by Mr. Jack Nussbaum in memory of his father. Shem should have an aliyah. Our families go back to Germany from before the war. So it's special that the shiur is dedicated le'ilui nishma. So we began last time our series of personal status determinations in halacha. Last time we focused on how we prove Jewishness. What I'd like to focus on today is a different personal status issue. What is the status in halacha of civil marriages and of non-halachic marriages? This is relevant most commonly in the following two scenarios. Number one, a lichachila determination, a preemptive determination. The other one, a bidyeved, a post-facto determination. First question where this comes up is sometimes you may have a situation in which a couple is married in a non-halachic way, be it a civil marriage or a marriage performed by a non-halachic clergyman, and for whatever reason, it's difficult or impossible to procure a get. So can we allow a person in such a marriage to remarry without the issuance of a get? That's issue one where this comes up. But the second manifestation of the, so to speak, post-facto bidyeved question is when it comes to issues of mamzerus, where there's a concern that maybe a product of a second marriage is illegitimate. In a situation where a woman is married and then has a child from another man, that child is presumably a mamzer. One second. But if we determine that the initial marriage perhaps was not a halachically valid marriage, then that would allow us to be machshir the product of a second marriage. Rabbi Brookhammer.
Why are we concerned with the get? As you say, it's difficult to get a get.
Right.
Your first example, they weren't married halachically.
Great, so that's exactly, that's why we have a shiur, that's what we'll talk about right now. That's, right, we're anticipating the topic. Good.
Can I leave now?
Rabbi Brookhammer solved all our problems, we can all go home, and there's nothing more to talk about. The question is, does a civil ceremony, a non-halachic ceremony, perhaps anyway, constitute a halachically valid wedding? And even if not, how do we view the status of individuals who are living together in a marital context without a halachic ceremony? So if you look in the Mar Mekomos sheet on page 2, first source, Gemara in Gittin, Pei Aleph Amid Aleph, Ante Pei Aleph Amid Beis. I apologize, there's really a longer excerpt that we should see here. I forgot to instruct it to be here. I personally prefer having Mar Mekomos in kind of a Tzura Sadaf, so you can see actually what the Gemara looks like in the Gemara. But nowadays the style seems to be to just cut and paste, so whatever makes people happy. But the Mishnah there says, in Gittin and Daf Aleph Amin Aleph, Hamigarish es ishto velana imo bepundiki. A man gives his wife a get, and subsequent to the issuance of that get, they spend the night together in an inn. Beshame Omrim Eina Sriche Menuget Sheni. Beshame says the fact that they spent the night together does not require another get. Ubeisol Omrim Sriche Menuget Sheni. Beisol says no. There is some kind of an implicit remarriage here, and therefore it's necessary to procure a second get. What is behind this Mishnah? The Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bar Barchan Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So the machlokas here is where there is a testimony that the couple cohabited together. Beshame assumes the fact that they cohabited together does not mean it was for the sake of marriage, because people do so illicitly. They do so l'shem znus, not for the sake of marriage. Beisilah savri ein adam osa bilasa bilasnus. Beisilah says no. There's a presumption that if two people are cohabiting together, it's for the sake of marriage. Because why would someone engage in a promiscuous relationship? Then the Gemara goes on to say, and you don't have the next lines here, that really the machlokes is where we didn't see anything. All we know is that these two people went into a house together. That's all we know. We have witnesses that they went into the house. And the Gemara says the machlokes really is about hein hein ede yichud, hein hein ede bia. Do we assume that if there are Eda Yichud, if there are witnesses that see a couple being alone together, that that is the equivalent of actually seeing the couple being intimate together. And because of Ein Adam Bilasa Bilasnus, the second step is, if we assume Hein Hein Eda Yichud, Hein Hein Eda B, we assume the position of Beis Hillel as we do, that the fact that there are witnesses to the seclusion means that there are de facto witnesses to intimacy, then Beis Hillel also assumes Ein Adam Osa Bilasa Bilasnus. If a couple is living together, they're clearly doing so for the sake of marriage, and there is an implicit marriage that takes place, and therefore a get is required. Okay, that's the Mishnah and the little piece of Gemara here in Gittin, Pei Aleph Amud Aleph, Pei Aleph Amud Beis. Now, what exactly is, what are the parameters of this concern of Ein Adam Osa Bilasa Bilasnus, that people will not live together in promiscuity? The context of the Mishnah is limited. The context of the Mishnah is only two people who had previously been married. There's a certain pre-existing relationship between them, and then if they get together again, there's a presumption that getting together was for the sake of remarriage. But how broadly is this principle applied outside of that limited context of the Mishnah and the Gemara in Gittin? So this is a machlokes between the Rambam, one second, the Rambam and Rov Rishonim, the Rambam, the majority of Rishonim, against the position of the Gaonim that the Rambam quotes. Yes?
If their purpose is to make a second marriage,
right?
So wouldn't they ask for Eidim, not just Eidim have to be passing by?
So the presumption of the of this chazaka, if you will, is that in an ideal world, people would think ahead, but they're not thinking ahead. But in the moment, they are they want to do it l'shem ishus and not l'shem znus.
So you have another problem. What's the kavanah, and do you have Eidim?
So, Hein Hein Eda Yichud tells you, you do have Edim. The fact that they're Edim, that they were Miyachi together, means that they're halachically Edim to be. Okay, so let's go on and see what the Rambam says. Perek Yud Geirishin Halacha Yud Ches. We'll read Halacha Yud Ches together. Halacha Yud Ches just tells us what we just saw in the Mishnah and the Gemara, that we assume hein hein eidi yichud hein hein eidi bia, and even absent formal witnesses, we can assume that the cohabitation was for the purpose of marriage. Then the Rambam quotes the halacha yates haru miksas ha-ga'onim. There's an opinion of some of the ga'onim shekol isha shetibal lifnei eidim tzricha get. Halacha Yuchas was the context of our Gemara of a couple that previously had been married, got divorced, and then got together again. Halacha Yates, the Gaonim tell us that any woman, kol isha shetibal b'fnei edim tzrichaget, any woman that cohabits with another man in the presence of edim requires a get. Chazaka she'ein adam osa bilasa bilasus, because of this presumption that a person is not going to engage in such a relationship for promiscuity. They want it to be a sanctioned relationship for the sake of marriage. Then the Rambam himself, on the third line here in the middle, argues, Kol dvar me'elu rechokim heim ve'ein ayad mo'od midarchei hara. This is very foreign to me. Ve'ein roi lismach aleihen, you should not rely on this position of the Gaonim. Shelo amru chachamim chazaka zu, ela v'ishto shagir shel bilvat. The chazak of Ein Adam Bilasa Bilasnus is limited to the scenario of a married couple that gets divorced and gets together again. Oh, then the Kaddish Al Tanai Ubal Stam. Or, where there was an act of Kedushin, it was an act of Kedushin with a Tanai, with a condition, and then it's followed up by a relationship. So in that case, in those cases, Shrei Ishto, there, either in the case of Kedushin Al Tanai, a Kedushin with a condition, there already was an act of Kedushin, or the case where they had previously been married and there was a pre-existing relationship, and in those situations, unless you explicitly indicate otherwise, there's a presumption that Ein Adam Osa Bilasa Bilasnus. According to the Rambam, which is the position of Rav Rishonim, as we will see, the Gemara's presumption of Ein Adam Osa Bilasa Bilasnus is limited to very specific contexts. There is a famous tshuva of the Rivash. The Rivash was one of the Rishonim who lived initially in Spain, and then he was forced to North Africa during the riots of the 1390s in Spain. So he was dealing in a situation, this is pre-expulsion, but the persecutions had started, and there was a subset of the Jewish population that were what we call anusim, or those who were forced to at least outwardly adopt a Christian lifestyle. The Rivash in Siman Vav was asked about the following situation. A woman had come from one of these Spanish territories, and the family were anusim, the family had at least outwardly been practicing Christianity, and she married in a Catholic Christian ceremony, she married another Jew. They lived together for a few months. The husband abandoned her, nowhere to be found. She tried to procure a get unsuccessfully, no idea where the husband is. Is she allowed to remarry? So the Rivash here deals with this question, what is the status? This is not a civil marriage, which didn't exist. This is a Christian marriage, a church wedding. So what is that status in halacha?
Good?
Okay. Not good, but it happened. So the Rivash says as follows. Number one, so maybe you should entertain that even though there is a church officiant, but maybe there is a proper act of kedushin anyway, maybe the husband gave the wife a ring, and there were a kasher edim in the audience, so maybe that should be a valid marriage. So he writes, the second line where it says tshuva, afim hayu behem edim kasherim, even if there were kosher witnesses, it's still not a halachically valid wedding. Sherei lunis kayim behem nothin huva amar hu. It wasn't the normal halachic process where a husband gives a wife a ring and says, harei am mekudeshes li kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, because the nature of the ceremony was that, I'm skipping a few lines, there were lenos and laklum, he didn't give her anything. Rav shakomir mevarich hasam b'kol gadol v'nosein tabas l'chalechet. I don't know what the normal ceremony of the church is now, but he's representing that the priest gave them a blessing, and the priest distributed rings to both the chasan and the kala, so that doesn't look anything like a halachic ceremony. Moreover, there was no intention of Kedushin, Kedas, Moshe, Yisrael. There was no intention of a Jewish wedding. And bottom line, there weren't any kosher edim there anyway. At least that's a representation of the Rivash. Yeah.
How is this different from the first scenario where they were married and then divorced, and they were, all they did theoretically to get married again was not, they didn't have a ceremony, and there was no, we don't ring exchanges, had relations the second time.
Right.
So we're assuming they're married again.
Good. So we have to look at...
So the religious ceremony in this context is irrelevant. The ring is irrelevant. It's the relations later that makes it relevant.
Very good. So we have to look at both of those. The Rivash is focusing on the ceremony itself, and then we're going to talk about the subsequent relationship as well, which is part of this discussion. So we'll get there in a minute. Yeah.
Just quick, is it because by having been married before Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, assumedly,
yeah,
they've established that they are in the mahalach of halacha, right, as opposed to two people that just cohabit? Is that the distinction that's being made?
That is an important distinction that we will get to. But there are two layers here which we have to analyze through. Number one, how do we assume the original Machlokas Rambam, the Gaonim? According to the Rambam and what we say are Rov Rishonim, we're not concerned with Ein Adam Osabila Sabilasnos in any situation. Even aside from the case of a couple that had previously been married, we're not concerned about Ein Adam Osabila Sabilasnos. And the Rivash seems to go with that approach against the Gaonim. So that solves your problem as well, that we're not worried about Ein Adam Osabila Sabilasnos. Even if we were to be, we'll see other sources shortly that support your point, maybe this presumption only applies to people who are within the mindset of living a halachic observance. Very good. Then the Rivash makes another point, which somewhat speaks to both points, that the situation at hand, the woman was not living an observant lifestyle. At least we know that she wasn't going to the mikvah. So the Rivash argues, it doesn't make sense to, even if you would entertain that Ein Adam Osa Bilasa Bilasnus is relevant in the situation that they're living together for the sake of marriage, that only makes sense if it's someone who's concerned about halacha. If a woman is going to violate the Isser Nida, which is a Chi of Kares, which is a very significant Isser, so we don't believe that a woman who's going to wantonly violate Isser Nida is going to be concerned about the less severe prohibition of living together not in a marital context. The issue involved, however we define living not in a marital context, panoi and panuya, it's less severe than an iser nida. So she's not worried about the iser nida, she's definitely not worried about panoi haba al panuya, and we're not concerned about in adam osabilas abilas nus at all. This position of the Rivash is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, both by the Mechaber and by the Ramah. The Mechaber is in the context of Hilchos Gittin. The Ramah is in the context of Hilchos Kedushin. Yeah?
I'm not sure I understand that logical, because the not living together is a general, is generally accepted,
right,
in those days, was a generally accepted concept.
Right.
Whereas Nidus is something that's very specific to Klal Yisrael.
Right.
The idea that they're not focusing on the severity. They're focusing on what is the norm of that particular period.
Right, but Ein Adam Osa
Bilas.
I got that. Ein Adam Osa Bilas Nus is in the context of a halachic lifestyle. The question is, do people have in mind that they want this to be a halachically sanctioned marriage? So if they're not, as opposed to just a marriage in the eyes of the world. So if the mindset is, we don't care about more severe violations, then they shouldn't really be concerned about being in a halachically sanctioned wedding. That's independent of how society views marriage.
But if these were on Nusin, isn't that a very significant fact in that maybe they were putter from a lot of the mitzvos that they would have been killed for doing?
Right.
But when they got married, their intent was to have a Jewish marriage, and this was the best they could do.
So even though they're getting married in the church, the intention was to have a Jewish wedding.
To get married to halacha, this is the best they could do.
Right. So
that's why they called on Nusin.
What you're saying is maybe a third of the way or half of the way towards a point that Ramosha makes about this Rivash that hopefully we'll get to. But I hear the approach.
I think you're giving them way too much credit.
Who are we giving credit to?
These Yanusim.
Okay.
Yanusim who actually cared about still being Jewish would have done it in the basement somewhere in secret. They wouldn't have gone to a church to get
the event. Okay, so we can speculate.
If this was their only marriage, the woman never claimed that she had a Jewish marriage otherwise.
Yeah. Okay, so we can discuss that. Let's move on. The Ramah writes,
we take the statement Ein Adam Osa literally, that he doesn't want to look bad in the world or live a, generally speaking, quote, moral life. Or he wants to follow halach. So it doesn't say all Adam Osa the kind of halach.
Right.
Or Ein Adam Osa be also be a shalok halach.
Right, but it seems to be in the context.
Which means the world does count.
Okay, it does seem to be in the context of a halachic concept, a halachic existence, not however society defines it. At least that seems to be how the Rishonim understand the notion. But let's move on. So the Ramah, source number 4, quotes this Rivash essentially lahalacha. V'chein mumer shenasa mumeris avodas uchavim. An apostate marries an apostatess. Bini Musayhan in a church ceremony. Viniskayru Akharkach. It doesn't mean that they convert, it means that they are Chozer B'tshuva. They come back to living an observant lifestyle. Ein Kan Chashash Kedushin Klal. There's no concern that they actually were halachically married. Umutaris Latsek Fimena Below Get, and therefore she's allowed to remarry without a get. Afa Pisha Sha'ima Kamashanim, even though they were living together for a long time. Eino elok is nusba alma. We don't view that as a halachic wedding, a halachic marriage, a halachic union. Therefore, based on this rivash, a get is not required in such a situation.
Could she marry Cohen?
What is if they were marrying other people?
I'm sorry?
If they were marrying other people after what? They were Baal Yeshuva.
If she wanted to marry someone else, she would not require a get from the first husband, correct? It would be married to a Kohen, so that's a whole sug of Reya Chaget, which is really beyond the purview of what we have time for right now. Okay. In the contemporary literature of the last couple of generations, this question of, we'll start with the halachic view of civil marriage, is known as the machlokas between Rav Henkin and Rav Moshe, even though, as we just saw, this is really an issue discussed in the Rishonim, the Ramim, the Gaonim, and it's clear in Shulchan Aruch how we paskin like the Rivash, and Rav Henkin has to try to figure out how do you fit the Rivash into his position. But just to present at least the thumbnail view of Rav Henkin's position, and then what we'll call the more consensus position, usually quoted with Shem Rav Moshe, but really many of the Gedolim of the last couple of generations. Rav Henkin, in a number of essays printed in his collected writings, in Perish Ivra, Lev Ivra, the original Perish Ivra, just about the whole thing is about this topic, a number of lengthy simanim. Part of his argument is that in the world of halacha, there are different classes of kinyanim, different classes of acquisitions. The certain kinyanim require kavanah, require intent. So if I acquire something by paying money for it, a kinyan kesef, or I pick something up, a kinyan hagbah, so there, in order for the sale to be effected, I need intent for the sale to work. However, there are other kinds of kinyanim, other kinds of means of acquisition that work even without a person's active knowledge. So for example, kinyan chatzer, if someone puts something in my backyard, there's a notion of chatzera shel adam kone shelami daito, a person's chatzer, a person's property, can acquire an object without his participation, without his knowledge. And Rav Henkin argues that this is true in more formal commercial transactions. It's also true in more global societal kinyanim, so to speak. Natural kinyanim that don't require kavana, don't require intent. So he argues that marriage, kiddushin, is a certain natural kinyan. And if a husband and wife are living together as husband and wife in a marital context, that constitutes a certain natural kinyan. So as long as you can argue that you have a baseline edus, baseline testimony to the fact that they're living together as husband and wife, people know that they share a residence, then that's enough to create a de facto halachic kiddushin, because you have this natural kinyan of living together in a marital context. And then he has, I'll just read a few lines because I think this is this captures some of his argument. On the top of, I guess this is source 5, this is from Simon Gimel in the Lev Ivra. It's a little bit faded, but we'll do our best. Umashiyesh nechnasin letagar mishim takana shaloti sharena benosis alagunos. So this is after he sets down the groundwork for the notion of a natural kinyan and the fact that people in this context intend to be married. So he says, but people are arguing that if we're not makel here, if we don't allow people to remarry without a get, where they can't procure a get from a civil marriage, then we're contributing to the aguna crisis. B'mashiyesh nifnasu l'targar mishim takana shaloti sharena benosis alagunos. Hine yadu hu she'ela she'ein nosin klal.
She'ela.
Oh, sorry.
She'ela
she'ein nosin klal k'das Moshe v'Yisrael, right? These people that don't have halachic marriages, hei meruchakim miyadus ma'od, they're very distant from observance. Ki chomer inyan zem, they call it ve'er shem Torah. This is a pretty significant aveira. What's going to happen? If you're going to allow these people to remarry without a get, so you're helping these people, but you're making things worse for the observant. Why? So there are plenty, unfortunately, plenty of from people whose husbands abandon them. And they just have a civil divorce. Oh, baruch, they run away. The ain wrote and leet and get, and they don't give a get. The hey muganus alamis, and these women are stuck. Umata kana yesh leila, and how are we going to help them? The zechas shalom yigrom legamri built in the sun kedas moshe. What's going to happen? That people are going to realize I'm better off being married civilly than married halachically. If I married halachically, if my husband abandons me, I'll be stuck. If I get married civilly, there's an easy solution. So it's going to create a situation where fewer and fewer people are going to be getting married kedas Moshe Yisrael. They're going to dafker want to avoid halachic kedushin as an insurance policy against the situation of igun.
Just empirically, this is what's happening in Israel.
Exactly, chacham adav minavi. So what Rav Henkin wrote at the time was not coming from nowhere. There were such movements. This is the literature in France. Give me a minute. I'm sorry. Okay, I didn't acknowledge anyone, sorry. This is the literature in France in the late 1800s. A Kuntres published Ein Tanai B'Nisuin in response to a movement there to have conditional marriage. And this is something that's going on now in Eretz Yisrael, a movement of Dafka not having halachic marriages for this particular reason. Now, we'll see. This consideration doesn't necessarily justify the end psak of requiring a get under all circumstances, but the idea is definitely something to think about. Yeah.
Since when do we paskin a shaila based on how the tzibur will react? If I have a whole bunch of chickens and I think they're tray, but what will people do? If I'm in the mountain of chickens, then
right.
Why
so,
chickens?
Right.
So therefore I'm gonna make this unkosher chicken kosher.
Yes. So why Rav Henkin is not presenting this as his halachic argument. He's presenting this as icing on the cake. Until now, he presented the notion of natural kinyanim and other arguments that we haven't had time to discuss over here. And then he points out, and by the way, he thinks that there's this other societal justification for his position, but this isn't the yesod of his halachic argument. But then he does argue in the next paragraph that maybe this whole conception of marriage is true in Western society, but wasn't true under the communists. Rav Henkin knew the communists. He escaped from there in the 1920s. But he presents the communist Russian perception of marriage as being very different, as being much more loose, amorphous, non-committal, and in that kind of a society where you don't have such a strong notion of marriage as being a permanent union, perhaps we would have a different perspective on the civil marriages performed in such societies. Okay. So that's Rav Henkin's bottom line, that he thinks Mi'ikra Din, that on every level a get is required even for a civil marriage, unless perhaps you're in communist Russia. There is a position of the Rogachover. Fascinating position of the Rogachover, based somewhat on the very first Rambam in Ishus Aleph Aleph, source number 6. The Rambam famously tells us, "Kodem Matan Torah haya adam pogeya isha bishuk." Before Matan Torah, how did marriage happen? A person would bump into a woman in the marketplace. In Ratzahu v'hi lisa samachnis labeisa, they go home. Bola beinol bein atzmo v'tia lo isha. And that was marriage without any ceremony. Kevin shenit na Torah nitzav Yisrael sheim yirtzai ish lisa isha yikna osa tchil b'fnei edim v'achir kach tiel al isha shenamar kikach ish isha b'ayilat. That all changed with Matan Torah. Now we have a system of kedushin. Part of the Rogachover's argument is that maybe that initial mode one of marriage, the pre-Matan Torah model, still exists to some level. So maybe there is a way of creating a sanctioned marriage, even with the pre-Matan Torah model, that would on some level still require a get. He kind of creates this middle ground where it's not a 100% wedding marriage, but it may be married to the Indian certain things. So it's not something generally accepted in the literature, but a fascinating suggestion that maybe civil marriage falls into that pre-Matan Torah category. The Dvar Avram, the Kovner Rav, writing, I don't recall the Tshuva's data, but it would have been in the 20s or the 30s. Dvar Avram is, see if I have the Mar Malkum, it's in Chelik Beis. I'm going to have it here somewhere. Yeah, Chelik Gimel, sorry. Chelik Gimel Simen Kavtes Os Gimel. Chelik Gimel Simen Kavtes Os Gimel. He quotes Rav Henkin's argument. He quotes Rav Henkin from New York. Rav Henkin was already in New York then. And the Dvar Avraham, the Kovner Rav, writes that you could argue, in some sense, the opposite. That dafka, if a couple is going to have a civil marriage, they're indicating that they're not interested in Kiddushin Kedas Moshe Yisrael. They were now talking about the Anusim in the 1390s in Spain who had no choice but to have a church ceremony. In America, people can do whatever they want. And if they want to have a civil marriage, aren't they indicating that they are not interested in Kiddushin Kedas Moshe Yisrael? And perhaps that's a stronger indication that there's no intention of Ein Adam Osa Bilaso Be'ilas Znus. Okay. Let's go now to some of Ramosha's tshuvos, reflecting what we'll call the more consensus approach, that on a lichachila level, when it comes to civil marriage, it is advisable to procure a get, which is the general practice of Bate Din around the world, out of deference to the position of Repenkin, what we'll call the minority position. But if push comes to shove, Ramosha was willing to allow for someone to remarry without a get, where there is only a civil ceremony. We're not yet getting to non-halachic ceremonies, we're still talking about civil ceremonies, and we'll get to non-halachic ceremonies shortly. So Rav Moshe, one shuva is, you have this in source number 7, Evan Ezra Chelek Aleph Simen Ayin Hey. Chelek Aleph Simen Ayin Hey. The story was a woman who was married in a civil ceremony, and she broke up and got back together, and broke up and got back together many times with her husband until he finally abandoned her, and there was no possibility of procuring a get. So Rav Moshe argues that if push comes to shove, we assume, like the Rivash, that when it comes to essentially non-religious people, the presumption of Ein Adam Osa Bilasa Bilasus does not apply. We don't assume, if push comes to shove, that they really intend to be living, to be married in a halachically sanctioned way. And even if they're living in a religious neighborhood where there are religious Jews, kosher edim, who see them living together as husband and wife, see them living in the same residence, if push comes to shove, we still fall back on the Rivash that Ein Adam Osa Bilasa Bilasnus does not apply. Now, he does have one quibble, so to speak, with the Rivash. One of the Rivash's points was, if a person is not observant of Taharas HaMishpacha, then you can assume that they don't care to be living together promiscuously. So Moshe says you could distinguish, possibly, because you might have a situation where access to a mikveh is difficult. A woman is in a community where there's no ready access to a mikveh. So if the mikveh was down the block, it would be one thing. But she's in a position where it's not so easy to be makir about Taharas HaMishpacha. But if you were to ask her, do you want to be married in a halakhically sanctioned way, she would still want to do so. That's one quibble, so to speak, that Rav Moshe has about the Rivash. But his bottom line is still that Ein Adam Osa Bilasnus, if push comes to shove, does not apply to non-religious individuals living in that kind of a society. Maybe or maybe not. Rav Moshe seems to be saying that if the person is totally mufka from anything, so then you don't say it on the must be less of belessness because it's not part of their consciousness. If it's someone who has a background, but even though they don't go to the mikvah, maybe there's a cheshbin, so perhaps there you could distinguish. What about a marriage performed, or wedding performed, by a non-halakhic clergyman? Where does that fit? So Moshe has a number of tshuvas. One of them you have here, Chelek Aleph Simen Ayin Vav, that deal with different aspects of this question. One aspect is, maybe even if there is a non-observing clergyman, maybe despite the fact, so to speak, there is still a halachically valid wedding. If a man gives a woman a tabas that he owns and says, Harei Mekudesh Yisli Kedas Moshe Yisrael, in the presence of two kosher edim, so the non-Orthodox clergyman doesn't need to be there. It doesn't make a difference. From Alav already, you could have had a... I'm sorry?
In this case, with Reform Conservative or Constructionist, how do you define two kosher edim?
Okay, good. So I haven't defined that yet, but whatever they are, if they exist independent of the clergyman or the officiant, that may still be a halachically valid ceremony. Now, what Rav Moshe does say is that you can't assume that was the case. There is a Tshuva Chasam Sofer, Simon Kuf, Eben Ezer, which I'm not going to have time to get to today, but the Chasam Sofer there argues, quoting Piskei Tshuva, that any time you have a wedding officiated at by a, we'll call Orthodox clergyman, someone who knows what he's doing, so even if you don't have ready aides, ready testimony to say what happened there, you have the right to assume that it was a halachically valid ceremony. That the presumption is that if it was a Orthodox clergyman, someone who knows what he's doing, a proper Masada Kedushin, the assumption is that he knew what he was doing and that it was done Kedas Moshe Yisrael, it was done Kedin. But you don't have that when it comes to a non-Orthodox clergyman. There's no presumption that he knew what he was doing. Then Ramosha argues here in Chelek Aleph Siman Ayin Vav that maybe on some level a wedding officiated at by a non-Orthodox clergyman could be worse than a civil wedding. Why is that? So maybe you could argue that if someone comes and has a civil marriage, their conception is we live in a society that separates church and state, so the civil ceremony is civil, and then the Jewish law thing is something else. So I'm getting a civil ceremony because that's what an American does, and maybe my intention is that I should be living in a marital context, in other mostly beloved. But if I'm having a religious ceremony done by a non-Orthodox clergyman, so I'm dafka saying, I don't want a Kedushin Kedas Moshe Misal. I'm dafka going to the Reform Rabbi, I'm not going to the Orthodox Rabbi, and that's my conception of a Jewish marriage, then if that's my conception of a Jewish marriage, then there's no ein other mosi bilasa bilasnas. Let me just get a little further, and then we'll try to take questions because we're running out of time. In other later tshuvas, Rav Moshe also addresses the halachic status of a non-Orthodox clergyman. Chelek Dalet Simen Yud Gimel, Chelek Dalet Simen Mem Vav, Dalet Yud Gimel, Dalet Mem Vav. Rav Moshe wrote slightly different things at different times, but the most extreme formulation that Rav Moshe has is that even the best of conservative rabbis are pesulim, are not considered a kasher aid, because they are members of a movement that engages in kfira, in not believing in Torah Misinai, in Torah Min HaShemayim, and even if he does so for Parnassah, then he's still considered to be a puzzle. So in your typical or atypical situation where you have a wedding officiated by a conservative rabbi, and the only potentially kosher aidim there are the conservative rabbi and let's say the chazan, so if you make a determination that even if the chazan was a proper shomer Torah mitzvos, let's say, but if the conservative rabbi is always going to be a puzzle, then you don't have two kosher aidim, and at least if push comes to shove, mekadosh veid echad is ein, I gotta go on, is ein kiddushav kiddushin. So this is a scenario that we encounter very often, both in the context of allowing a woman to remarry without a get, in the context of mamzeris. How do you deal with such a situation? You're just dealing with something like that right now. Not everyone agrees with Ramosha's extreme formulation here about a conservative rabbi. You had many such people who were themselves personally observant, Shomer Shabbos, but they had a conservative shtetl. So do you view such a person as a puzzle? Some of them were graduates of yeshiva who ended up in many members of the RCA who ended up in conservative pulpits. At one point, a significant percentage of the RCA membership were conservative places. So do we take that extreme formulation that they're a puzzle, or if the rabbi was basically a Shomer Shabbos, he happened to be in a conservative pulpit, is he still a kasha? So this is relevant to a lot of situations that come. I was just talking to Rav Natan Greenblatt, Zeigesund, one of at this point the Ziknei Misadrig in America, and the Talmid of Rav Moshe, who told me he thought Rav Moshe was pretty emphatic in that position, that every conservative rabbi is a puzzle, because he said to me that any conservative rabbi, if he had an emergency on Shabbos, would get into the car and drive to the Baal Bus that needed his attention. So that is a discussion among contemporary poskim. How far do we go with the passing conservative rabbis? But in many situations, even if the conservative rabbi was a kosher, but he was the only kosher there, everyone else was clearly not a kosher aid, and you don't have proper aidus. So often when we make these determinations, we try to get as much evidence as possible to see what was the what exactly happened at this wedding ceremony. Look at pictures, at videos, guest lists, to try to determine who was there. Often, not infrequently, we'll find that he was a conservative rabbi. We wouldn't rely on the conservative rabbi, but there were other Orthodox people present at the weddings. That's why the recommendation, I wouldn't say this on my authority, but Rabbi Willick says this, I think it's true, that if you find yourself in a situation where you're invited to a wedding being performed by a non-Orthodox clergyman, and there aren't other Shomer Shabbos there, or maybe there's one other Shomer Shabbos there, better not to be present for the chuppah. Because what's going to happen 20 years down the road where there's a divorce, no one's giving a get, and we're looking at the possibility of giving a het to nisuin on the basis of not having Shomer Shabbos aid and present? And if you're there and you're the Shomer Shabbos aid, you may be doing more harm than good, not giving a psak, but that's definitely something to consider in these situations. Yeah.
When the rabbi is Shomer Mitzvos and doesn't know what he's doing,
mm-hmm.
So we don't want people in the audience, maybe, to be non-Shomer Shabbos. Is that why the rabbi says, I point you two to be
Jewish? Nimzach and Karb Apostle. So you may have noticed that that's the second part of the shiur that we're not going to get to today, because I was a little more ambitious. I do appreciate the give and take. It's not like Rabbi Kiva had to wake up his Talmidim when they fell asleep, but Baruch Hashem, we don't have any such issues here. I appreciate the Shaka Vitaria, but the downside is I didn't get as far as I thought we would. So maybe we'll talk about that next time, but that is a topic into itself.
I assume if you're a Karo, then
If you're a Karo, then you're fine, right. Only if you'd be a Kosher aide anyway. So just to wrap up, these are some of the issues that we face in making such determinations, both in terms of giving a proactive het or nisuin, and in situations of potential mamzerus to allow someone love of a kal to marry freely on the basis of a previous marriage being done under non-halachic auspices.